When I published this collection of short stories in the United Kingdom, it became part of a fierce fight, a growing national movement, here determined to defend our public libraries. This happens to be a book that celebrates the communal impact on us of books and of reading, their vital importance when it comes to our individual lives and our shared histories, personal, cultural, social, local, and international. It celebrates the way our lives have been at least enhanced and at most enabled and transformed by access to public libraries. Democracy of reading, democracy of space, our public library tradition, wherever we live in the wide world, was incredibly hard won for us by the generations before us and ought to be protected, not just for ourselves, but in the name of every generation after us. Now here's the book, Crossing the World Like Books Do. And here's a greeting to the readers of this new North American edition. Hello. This book wishes you well. It wishes you the world. It wishes you somewhere warm, safe, well-lit, thoughtful, free, wide open to everybody, where you'll be surrounded by books and all the different possible ways of reading them. It wishes you fierceness and determination if anyone or anything threatens to take away your open access to place, space, time, thought, knowledge. It wishes you libraries, endless public libraries. Okay, well, you may have clicked on the link to bring you to this book review because you saw the author's name, Allie Smith, and you like Allie Smith. Or perhaps you saw Public Library and you were intrigued, or perhaps you just wanted to see what I'm reading now. Well, in any case, this is a collection worth reading. It's called Public Library, and it's by Allie Smith. And it's about, yes, public libraries. It's a place, a sense of place, an inspiration that floats over, into, and through this collection of short stories by Allie Smith, author of the recently published novel Autumn, and winner of awards that include the Scottish Arts Council Book of the Year Award, the Whitbread Award, and shortlisted for both the Man Booker and the Orange Prize for Fiction. Smith is an author to take note of. And Public Library is a great place to start if you've not yet fallen into her spell. Because from the first tale in Public Library, which is peppered with word entomologies, even as the protagonist aims to rescue a wheelchaired woman she spies, the woman trapped on a train at the end of its urban run as our protagonist looks on from her freedom outside, standing in an abandoned train yard. To the second tale where the narrator discusses her interest in languages, so many other than English. Through the means of internal dialogue with her dead father, the protagonist's family's involvement in World War I and World War II provide the on-running theme of this short story. And on to yet another tale in which the life of Scottish poet Olive Fraser is revealed through her early life and depression years of Highland Scotland and her sad descent into adult madness, even as her poetry sang out loud and strong and clear, even into today. And on through nine more short stories, each of these 12 short stories in Public Library, a gem of contemporary literature to my reading taste. That said, Public Library is obviously one of those books that I found myself wondering, did I read the same book as the other reviewers read? I found Allie Smith's writing in this book to be charming, emotionally compelling, perhaps more tightly woven than not. And while I agree that, quote, the stories themselves don't fall into any kind of easy categorization, end quote, given the range of characters and storylines we come across in the book, I find myself baffled by other reviewers who write, quote, I've never read anything by Allie Smith, so I feel like I had to spend some time adjusting my brain to her writing, to her whimsical thought processes. Once I did, Public Library and other stories really worked for me. Each of the stories is short, nonlinear, impressionistic, often more poetry than fiction. I found myself loving sentences, paragraphs, shifts in narratives, references to books and authors, and her playfulness with words more than I liked the individual stories. But it all amounted to an experience I really appreciated. Some smiles, some sentences, and passages I had to read out loud to my husband, some doubling back to make sure she had really written what I thought I had just read, and some doubling back because the sentence was so delicious, end quote. I found myself saying, glad you liked this book too. But what book were you reading? Perhaps Autumn, Ali Smith's newest full-length novel? For yes, in Autumn we find passages that are indeed impressionistic, nonlinear. But in Public Library, not so much impressionistic as full. Perhaps impressionistic in touch here and there. But regardless, Ali Smith is an author to sip much more than to swallow whole. I agree there. Let's listen to a little bit from that opening short story. It's a little off. It's not the normal short story, perhaps, that we're used to reading in magazines or in short story collections. But on the other hand, I didn't find it all that off-putting. In fact, I found it quite enthralling. We'll join it kind of partway in to our tale. That's how I knew from up here on the slant of the bridge that this train below was the same train I'd just been on. And that's how I could spot exactly the carriage I'd been on, because that woman in the wheelchair who'd been in the same carriage as me was still there on that empty train. I could see from here that she was leaning forward in her chair and beating on the train door with her fist. I could see she was yelling. I knew she was making a lot of noise, and I knew I couldn't hear any of it. I watched the silent beat of her. Then the train slid out of view. The driver will find her, I thought. Surely they check to make sure their trains are empty. Surely people must fall asleep or be caught on trains like that all the time. Probably she has a mobile and has called people and let them know. It's even possible that she wants to be on that train, that she's meant to be on it there, alone. But through the scratchy perpex of the other side of the pedestrian bridge, I could see that there was a foot-worn footpath going down towards the rails, the kind we used to make in the riverbanks and slopes of the fields when I was a child, the kind that people make in places where paths aren't supposed to be. At the bottom of the path, a barbed wire fence that shut the station off from the public was splayed open, the size of a big dog or a crouching adult. Next to this hole was a sign which said, in letters large enough for me to be able to read from here, that trespassing was prohibited, that the only people allowed past this point were rail personnel. If we find you trespassing, you will be fined. I found I was thinking about the person or people who'd originally worded that sign. Had there been special meetings held to decide the wording? Did they or he or she pause for a moment at all over find and find, F-I-N-D and F-I-N-E-D? And why, anyway, did the word fine, F-I-N-E, mean a payment for doing something illegal at the same time as it meant everything from okay to really grand? And was it all connected that the word grand could also mean £1,000? Did that mean the notions of fineness and grandness in their traveling etymologies were often tied up with notions of money? I hadn't a clue. But I had an urge to look them up in a dictionary and see. It was the first urge to do such a thing I'd had in quite a while. I turned around. I retraced my steps down the slant of the bridge and under the little barrier between the bridge and the grassy bank. I went down the path towards the hole in the bent back fence. I slid myself through the space without catching my clothes on any of the sharp, cut open bits of it, and I stood up straight again in the litter next to the bramble bushes. I glanced one way, then the other, along the set of rails in front of me. A train was up ahead of me. I wondered if it was the right train. There was something fine in it, just walking along a forbidden track, thinking pointlessly about words, traveling etymologies. That was a good phrase. It'd be a good name for a rock band. It'd be a good social anthropological name for a tribe of people who jumped rolling stock and lived in it, sheltering under the waterproof tarpaulins when it rained, sitting when it was sunny on the footprint spaces, if that's what they were called, or lying stretched out on the tops of the cargoes of carriages, reprobates, meaning dropouts, living a freer, more meaningful life than any of us others who were able to choose the traveling entomologies. It was a good idea. And now, background murmuring through my head again for the first time in ages, was a welcome sound, the sound of the long, thin, never-ending, seeming rolling stock of words, the sound of life and industry, word after word after word, coupled to each other by tough little iron joists, traveling from the past to the present to the future, like rolling stones that gather moss after all. I mean take a rich, full word like buxom, which was a word I knew the history of, since at another point in my life, in what felt like a life centuries before the one I had now, I had liked words immensely and thought a lot about them and about how they were used. At the beginning of its history, buxom meant obedient, compliant, gracious. Then later in time, it meant blithe and lively. Then a bit later, it started to mean overweight because larger people are traditionally seen as blithe and cheery. Then it stopped being about both men and women and became only about women in a revealing fusion of compliant, obedient, merry, and big-breasted. Or the word aloof, which was a shipping term coming from luff, the word for the command to distance your boat from something too dangerously close to it. Or the word clue, too, which came from the word for a ball of thread and the coinage of which was probably something to do with the big ball of string Theseus took into the labyrinth with him to mark his way out and defeat the Minotaur. I was walking through the outside of a dark, dead, stretched-off train. Words were stories in themselves. Well, as we begin each new story, Smith offers her title theme, Public Library, by giving us short essays written by contemporary literary lights, pointing out why she and why they have chosen public libraries as a lodestone in their lives, where those repositories of words, if you will, have become so important to them. And while the essays and viewpoints were written from a British perspective, they will be easily recognized by this American and by you, too, as Smith and her friends ponder the fate of the public library in our contemporary world and reminisce about the importance of public libraries in her and her friends' youth. Indeed, so important is the public library in our lives that just about every one of the many reviewers of public library take up this call and response. Quote, "Thanks. This summer, my husband and I traveled a few days through New Hampshire and Vermont. Every little town seemed to have a fire station, city hall, and library right in the center. There are unusual spaces where you can spend time without feeling like you have to buy or sell something. Hope you enjoy your time in your library." End quote. Let's give the final word to a friend of Allie Smith who wrote this about her memories of public libraries growing up. Public libraries, after all, are one of the treasures of childhood for many of us. And here's one reminiscence, I think, that travels well from England to America, perhaps even back again. As the author writes, "This is what I think of when I think of school holidays. Me and my friend Lisa, cycling at full speed on our bikes, and the route is always to the library. It started before the time they'd let us walk to school by ourselves, but for some reason, we were allowed to do this. First, it was the branch library. We were 8 or 9 years old, and we went most days. We'd get out our books, cycle home, and read them in the garden in one go. It was an independence thing for sure. We went, chose, borrowed, pedaled home, read what we'd got, then went back again, chose again, came home again, and read. We'd throw our bikes down outside its doors. I remember that like it was a part of it. And that we didn't have any money, but that we didn't need any money. Here, transaction was a whole other thing. It was a scheme where you got points for taking out books, and when you'd reached a certain number of points, the prize was that you got to help the librarian tidy up the shelves. We all wanted to do that. We read as much as we could so we could win the prize. The librarian was canny. Then the new library was built, a terribly stylish 5-story building, a great addition to the borough where we lived. A real frisson came off the place. It still does when I remember it as opening. It was cleverly imagined, beautifully designed. Inside the children's library, there was a sunken reading space that went down into the floor, a small-scale amphitheater where we sat, citizens of thought, books open on our knees. Across from us, there was a window into the place where adult readers could go and listen to records on a great, big, semicircular sofa. The librarian, momentarily transformed into DJ, would put the record on a turntable on the librarian's desk, and the people listening would plug a set of headphones behind them on the sofa to hear it. Music for free! I can't tell you what the opening of that library was like where we lived. It was an event. It was a really fantastic moment in my life, in our lives, a moment of real change. The brand new building brought with it the idea that our local history was important, that books were important, but also that we were too, and that where we lived was, that it had a heritage and a future that mattered. There was something very grounded about that beautiful new build. I'm pretty sure that's why we were allowed to go there. on our bikes by ourselves like we did, so long as we cycled on the pavement there and back and were careful about the traffic. There's so much to enjoy in this book. Short stories about words, yes, with characters and with plots and that sort of thing, but it's mainly about the words and how words are exciting and make a difference in our lives, and about that place where you can get those words, the public library. The book is entitled Public Library and Other Stories. It's by an author you ought to know if you don't already, Allie Smith, and it's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.